Furs got a rejection for too bulky, which was a relief to Perry since he didn't look forward to potentially sharing a trip home with a caravan full of furs in the height of the summer. The second, however, held out his hand. Mags picked something vaguely roundish off the man's palm and examined it closely. He then put it back down with a grin.
I'll take as many of those as you can bring me. Those are very good garnets.
The other men exchanged slightly startled, then pleased glances, and all but the one who had brought the garnets in the first place hurried off. The man remaining behind took a little sack off his belt and handed it and the garnets in his hand to Mags.
There's a lot of them that we ain't shipped free yet, trader, he said, sounding a little worried.
And I'll take as many as you fellows can bring me, Mags repeated, at a fair price. You're lucky it was me that came here. I not only know stones, I know who to sell them to.
Mags looked over the stones in the bag with a critical eye.
I think we can bargain for something pretty for your ladies, and you'll get some coin at the end as well.
They put their heads together over the display, with Mags asking lots of questions to draw the fellow out. Eventually, the man wended his way home looking completely satisfied, with a shawl's worth of fine wool, the Chira wool yarn to embroider it with, several colors of embroidery thread, a string of agate beads and three strings of glass beads, a couple of hanks of the tiny glass beads, a full paper of pins, six needles, and two kinds of trim. And he still walked away with several small silver coins in his belt pouch.
That's probably the most coined money he's ever had in his life, Mags observed, leaning back against the caravan. We'll stay here for another candle mark or so in case someone else has a cache of garnets somewhere. But I expect they'll all have to go wherever the field is and spend some time chipping stones loose. Or maybe send their younglings out to do it.
But no one else appeared. And at the end of the allotted time, they picked up the display tables, goods and all, and took them into the stable, where they left them in one of the loose box companion stalls.
Papa, what happens if they bring us too many stones?
Perry asked as they closed up the caravan and went back into Arvel's house by the kitchen door.
Well, I actually came well equipped for trading, Mags replied, and he sniffed the air appreciatively.
Arvel ladled out a thick soup into big bowls, and one of the fresh loaves and a bowl of butter were on the table.
It takes time to chip a garnet free of stone without breaking it. I don't think there will be too many stones for us to trade or pay for, and this venture is actually going to turn a very nice profit. I'll let the Jewelers Guild know about this place when we get back, and they can send a journeyman on a regular basis to buy.
What are you buying?
Arvel asked, cutting and buttering the bread as they got settled.
Rough garnets, Mags replied, helping himself to buttered bread.
Arvel blinked at him.
Those are worth something? The Littles just chipped them out to play conkers with. There's a field west of here where it's easy to find them.
The ones I was offered are of good color and don't have obvious flaws, Mags told him. I know gemstones. These are good. I was telling my son that I'm going to make sure the Jewelers Guild in Haven knows to send buyers out here from now on. Your little town is about to become prosperous, so before we go looking for your trouble, you need to sit down with all the townsfolk, work out something that allows everyone to share in the prosperity, and get it on paper. I'll take it back with me. Otherwise—
Oh, I know, Arvel replied. When we were all on our training circuit, one of the villagers ended up with a gold mine. Good thing Harold Ellen was in charge. She sat everyone down and got everything in writing while we were all feeling too dazzled to be greedy.
You also don't want strangers rushing up here to claim the land either, Mags cautioned him. This isn't going to be like a gold mine. Garnets aren't that valuable. They'll be valuable enough, though, to give everyone a nice, reliable source of coin, which will come in handy if there is a crop failure.
He was about to say more when there was a timid tapping at the door frame. They all looked up to see all the men of the village were back, including one who was rather flowery.
The miller, who was also the headman, I guess, Perry thought.
We kind of overheard that last part, Orville, said the miller. Rovus here told us what you gave him for the garnets, or he told me, and I reckon I'd better bring everyone here so we could get all this garnet business worked out while everybody is feeling friendly.
Mags looked at Arvel in astonishment. Arvel shrugged and mouthed luck at him. Perry got what he meant immediately. This was Arvel's gift in action, for certain sure. Arvel wanted to live in a peaceful, friendly place where everyone got along. and his luck was making sure it was, and stayed that way. Suddenly Perry understood why everything about this place that had seemed to be too good to be true actually wasn't. Wasn't too good to be true, that is. It was Arvel's luck.
Well, all right, Jeffer. Bring the rest around to the front door. You all know where to go. Just let us finish our supper and we'll be right with you.
Arvel made it quite clear from his posture that he was perfectly all right with them invading his house, but he wasn't going to cut his supper short for anyone.
We'll do that, Arvel,
said the miller, and the knot of men left the doorway and presumably went around to the front of the house.
Perry?
Arvel said. Yes, sir? Perry sat straight up.
If you're done with your supper, would you go see if they need anything?
Arvel asked. Perry jumped up to do just that. It was easy enough to find where they were in the big house by the sound of voices. It turned out that at the front of the house was a single big room with three big tables put together in the shape of the letter U, with chairs all around them. That's where the men were.
Arvel says to ask you if there's anything you need, sirs, he called over the murmur of voices, causing every head in the room to turn in his direction.
Mugs, lad, the miller replied. Baker's gone for a barrel of beer.
Perry took a quick head count and fetched mugs until everyone had one. About that time, the baker returned with a keg of beer in the back of a farm cart. Some of the men helped him carry it in and set it up. They settled in chairs around the table with full mugs. Perry lingered, wondering if there was anything else he should do.
Making a good decision is thirsty work, said one of the men that Perry didn't know, and winked.
Here we are!
Arvel called from the door, carrying a roll of paper with Mags behind him. He spread out the map on the middle table.
Trader Mags here says first we need to draw out where the Garnet Field is on this map so I can send it to Haven to claim it for Withern.
He looked up at all of them.
You do want to claim it in common, right?
The men looked at each other, then back at Arvel.
If that seems best, said Miller.
It will be the easiest, Mags replied easily. Right, Arvel?
Aye. That's how we set up that gold mine in Bastion Stone,
Arvel told him, while following the directions two of the others gave him to outline the Garnet Field on the map.
All right, then. There it is.
They all stood and looked at the map with varying expressions of contemplation on their faces, as if outlining the field on the map had suddenly made it more real for them.
Now, the gold mine, we set up a system where we had a couple of men that were full-time miners and smelters,
Arvel continued.
They got paid a daily wage, everyone agreed on from the beginning. That came out of what they got for the gold, and the rest got divided equally among everyone. Now you can do that here, or you can work out some other deal.
After that, Perry quickly lost interest as the men all pondered various schemes, slowly, ridiculously slowly, he thought, weighing the positives and negatives. When it became apparent that this would probably go on for candle marks, he caught his father's eye with an imploring gaze, and Mags smiled and nodded at the door. Perry did not wait to be given a second invitation. He was out and into the main house in short order. But he wasn't yet sleepy, and he wasn't nearly as much of a bookworm as his sister was, so he went outside. Ryu was lying down beside the kitchen door and looked up as he came out.
They'll be at it all night, Ryu told him. Really, you can't blame them. This is something that is going to affect everyone in Withern for a long time to come. They want to get it right.
Perry was going to ask what was so hard about working out how to handle the garnets, then shut his mouth. Clearly, Arvel and his father knew things he didn't.
They're heralds. They have to know about how dynamics within a village work and can change. They especially have to think about the future, when Arvel won't be here. His luck won't be keeping the village peaceful, and there might be new people coming here, making it bigger. Who will want some of that profit, too?
Just hearing Ryu explain it all sounded far too complicated to think about. Another reason why he really didn't want to be a herald, if that was how heralds had to think.
I like my problems to have solutions, he said, sitting down next to Ryu and putting an arm over his neck.
Well, I'm not much good at pack dynamics, either, Ryu confessed. Oh, but that reminds me. We are about to have a visit from someone from my pack, a grandnephew of sorts.
We are?
He watched the fireflies floating above the yard between the stoop and the stable.
Why?
Because Laurel is a neuter like me. He's looking for adventure, and the pack thought I might provide it.
Ryu raised his head again and snuffed Perry's free hand.
I thought you and your father might like to have him along.
Well, Perry could certainly think of any number of ways in which a creature like a Kairi, the size of one of Lady Dia's biggest mastiffs, could come in handy. Hadn't he just been wishing that they'd thought to ask for one of those mastiffs before they left?
Well, I would,
he agreed.
Will I be able to talk to him like I can talk to you?
I'd be surprised if you couldn't.
The two of them sat there in comfortable silence for a long while, watching the fireflies and saying nothing. But Perry was thinking. Mostly, he was wondering about what this younger Kairi was like, and whether, like Ryu, he was looking for a human to attach himself to. Because if he was, well, Perry was more than willing to volunteer. 7. Mags's bed was positioned so that the morning sun struck him right on the face about a candle mark after sunrise if he didn't get up before then. This morning, it took having that reminder to get him out of bed. Mags was still feeling sleepy and a bit muddle-headed after the long night of careful, deliberate negotiation and planning, but on the whole, he was content. And he had to wonder, as he ducked his head into a basin of water to wash up and wake himself up a bit more, would things have gone as smoothly without Arvel's luck driving everything? He didn't think so. But the luck had prevailed, aided by years of the people of Withern mostly getting along and mostly on friendly terms with each other. And before everyone had gone to their beds, they got a solid plan locked down, in writing, and signed by all the men, with the agreement that all the women would come sign it today, so it would be on record that every adult in Withern was behind this agreement. It should hold for decades, with no one objecting to it, except perhaps for someone new moving in here with the notion of exploiting the village or the Garnet Field. But any changes would be for the rotating Garnet Council to decide, a council that, again, every adult in Withern would serve on in turn. Eventually, of course, the system would run into someone determined to be greedy. That's not likely to happen until Arvel's gone, and by then, someone trustworthy from the Jewelers Guild should be keeping an eye on things here.
How late were you up?
Perry asked incredulously as he came in for breakfast. It looked to his father as if he had been there long enough to eat two full servings of everything.
Late enough. I wanted to make sure we got the job done while everyone was still feeling accommodating, Mags replied. I think Arvel's planning on sleeping in. He did most of the work anyway. I just made some suggestions. He's the one who coaxed people around to the final agreement.
So you got them all to agree?
His son replied, sounding surprised. Mrs. Weaver slid a plate of eggs, ham, and flat cakes onto the table in front of him, and he looked up to thank her.
I surely didn't think it would take less than 3 days, but our Arvel managed,
Mrs. Weaver replied, with no little pride.
Bird told me all about it. It's a good arrangement. Everyone's a little bit unhappy, but mostly happy, which means no one's being taken advantage of.
Mags chuckled, while Perry looked a little confused.
Shouldn't everybody be completely happy?
His son asked.
If everyone is completely happy, it means we must have overlooked something, Mags explained.
Perry still looked confused, but he shrugged, willing to take his father's word for it. The two ate in silence for a while longer, although Perry was just eating normally now and not inhaling the food as fast as he could. Sometimes Mags wondered how he managed to not choke.
Ryu says another Kairi is coming to help us,
Perry said after a few moments of quiet that was very welcome after all of last night's babbling. Now it was Mags's turn to look confused.
When did he say this?
Last night, before I went to bed. It's like a grandnephew or something. We're going to let him, right? Help us, that is,
Perry demanded.
Think how useful Ryu was to Arvel. And Ryu is too old to go running around with us, even if he would leave Arvel, which he won't. I mean, we're not really supposed to be here, working out stuff for Withern. We're supposed to be out there.
He waved his hand vaguely in the direction of the greater wilderness beyond Withern.
We're supposed to be finding out if people are going missing, not trading for rocks or figuring out how to make sure everybody divides up the rocks so everyone gets a fair share.
Mags sighed. Of course Perry didn't see all this negotiation and helping the village to deal with a sudden influx of wealth as being important. He could understand that. He probably thought this was something Arvel should handle. Negotiating agreements among villagers wasn't exactly what spies were supposed to do. And Mags had only gotten the villagers to agree to him helping Arvel with this because of an invented on-the-spot experience as a master trader who negotiated such things with his fellow traders all the time. But Arvel didn't have the cachet of being an impartial herald here in Withern. He had lived here too long and had too many contacts. Anything he would have suggested could have been challenged with the suggestion that he was being partial to his friends. But nobody could lay that charge on Mags. He could also see Perry's side of things and why he was impatient to be doing something. At home, Perry would be attending the classes he enjoyed, having fun with his friends, or doing more special training with his father or Lord Jorthan. Here? Well, so far there hadn't even been much chance to use even the training he had, much less learn anything new. Naturally, he wanted some excitement. There was no excitement here. Truth be told, so far there hadn't been much for him to do, actually, other than learn how to drive the team of horses. So he had latched onto the reason they were out here in the first place, to find out if Arvel was right. The key phrase, of course, was if people were going missing, because at the moment, they only had Arvel's vague suppositions about it. Whereas right here, right now, they had a village to see to, and a bargain to set up among the villagers that would last for generations. The lad was bored, and there had never been any time for boredom in Perry's life so far. He wasn't in the least used to it. Mags pinched the bridge of his nose between his thumb and forefinger and told himself to have patience. "We'll get to that," he promised, but Perry frowned. "But right now, we need to make sure there aren't going to be any problems with the agreement. This sort of thing can spin off feuds and bad feelings that last for generations."
"The longer we stay here, the more people are going to go missing," Perry insisted, looking mulish. "And now we've got Laurel coming."
"Who?" Mags snapped, and then he reined his temper in.
"Laurel, Ryu's grandnephew. So we can leave Arvel in charge of the garnet stuff. He can help us. He can—"
"Perry, I am very tired," he said, interrupting. "And this is something Arvel can't do. I'll explain it all when I'm not so tired. One more day or two isn't going to make a difference."
Perry subsided, but Mags distinctly heard him muttering under his breath, "But what if it does?"
"I have a thought, but you might not approve," said Dallin.
"Let's hear it."
Perry did not often show his temper or sulk, but when he did, it could last for weeks, and Mags was essentially stuck with him and was not going to be able to escape his sour mood.
"Once this Laurel arrives, we allow Perry to go out with him to do some preliminary scouting."
"Absolutely not," he snapped.
He would have had no qualms if this had been a city, but Perry had no wilderness experience.
"Hear me out. Laurel is a Kyrie. His kind know their way around the wilderness, and Perry is a very clever boy. He can take one of the vanners and load it with camping supplies. It's summer, so it's not as if the weather is going to harm him. I think you should let him go. It will be good for him."
Mags groaned silently.
If he went along with this and Amelie ever found out about it, she would murder him.
"I can't believe I'm actually even considering this."
Sure, he and Perry had camped with the caravan, but that meant Dallin outside on watch and the walls of the caravan between them and any potential large predators. And maybe Perry would give up after the first night, but Perry was stubborn, and maybe he wouldn't.
"Let's see what this Laurel looks like," he finally conceded. "Then we'll make another assessment of your idea."
That seemed to satisfy Dallin, though Perry was still sulking.
"When this Kyrie shows up, he'll probably be a giant puppy and the whole thing will be moot," Mags told himself. "Even Dallin won't dare to suggest this again."
The signing was finally over. The last adult citizen of Withern had just left, and Mags was carefully folding up the copy of the agreement that everyone had now signed when Perry came running into the room in a high state of excitement, his bad temper forgotten.
"Laurel is almost here!" he cried excitedly. "Ryu says he's within smelling distance of us!"
Perry dashed out. Mags was in no great hurry.
Smelling distance for a Kairi could be leagues away, depending on the wind. He wanted to make sure he got the agreement tucked away safely, where it was unlikely to come to any harm. So when he finally noticed the profound silence in the house and went looking for Perry and the rest, it was with a start of surprise that he discovered Arvel, Perry, Ryu, Pelis, and Dallin in the yard between the stables and the house, all surrounding a massively muscled, exceedingly dignified, and fully adult Kairi. The Kairi looked up as he stood in the kitchen doorway and nodded at him.
"Hello,"
the beast said, still with immense dignity.
Hello, Laurel. It's good to meet you at last," Mags managed.
Laurel nodded.
"I rose very legs,"
came the next words from the Kairi's mouth. It was impossible to take him with anything other than complete seriousness, even if Mags hadn't a clue what he'd just said. "I rose what?" For a moment, he couldn't make the words form any sensible sentence. But then, the meaning, impossible as it was, hit him with the same impact as a bag of hammers.
"You... what?"
he gasped, staring from Laurel to an excited and pink-cheeked Perry and back again.
"You can't..."
"It's not exactly like being chosen by a companion, Mags,"
Arvel said apologetically, scratching his head.
"But it's sort of close. That's about the best way to put it, I guess. I don't think it would be a good idea to fight this, you know what I mean?"
Mags certainly did not know what Arvel meant, but he did know that this wasn't just a boy's infatuation with a weird dog. That was obvious, not only from Arvel and Ryu's decades-long partnership, but from the proprietary way in which Boy and Kairi looked at each other. This wasn't something he could fight. All he could do now was hope that Amelie wouldn't murder him.
"She's not going to murder you," Dallin said with no little irritation. "You're overreacting. Your son just gained a protector and a best friend for life, with none of the complications being chosen by a companion brings to the one who is chosen. And don't pretend that you don't know what I mean, Mags. Being chosen is why most heralds never marry or even have long-term relationships. You and Amelie are the exception that proves the rule."
Mags bit his lip. Dallin was right. Being chosen meant all sorts of things, and brought with it the burden of being a herald, with all that entailed.
"There, you see? Not so bad after all, is it? And Perry can still go right on to become the king's agent. Look at it this way. It's a lot easier to fit a Kairi into a room than a companion. A Kairi can go wherever he does, and a Kairi is a lot easier to hide than a companion. Laurel can always be explained away as being merely a dog, whereas companions... we stand out like lilies in a coal mine. Not the best thing if you are a covert agent."
And that was certainly true, too.
"Now, about that suggestion of mine."
"No,"
Mag said firmly. He put a bite of supper in his mouth and chewed.
"But..."
Perry began.
"No," Mags repeated. "I am absolutely, positively not letting you and that overgrown furball go gallivanting all over the countryside alone, no matter what Dallin thinks."
He had spent most of the afternoon arguing with his companion, who clearly had never been a parent. Perry must have thought he was going to get his way this time because he had brought the subject up the moment that they'd gathered for supper.
"Peregrine, can you name me 5 occasions on which you have camped overnight in the wilderness alone?" he continued.
Perry, who'd had his mouth open to protest, blinked, and being a truthful boy, gulped and answered,
No.
4. 2. 1. Mags persisted.
He already knew the answer, of course. "I would have no qualms about setting you loose in a city, or finding you a place on a large estate where you could work and observe. But I haven't given you the skills to live in the wilderness, and I can't give those to you overnight. Your Kairi friend will be a very little help with that. If you were planning on an unorganized search, which right now is the only thing that you could do, given the scant information we have you any idea where to begin? And last of all, what exactly do you think you would be looking for out there?" Perry subsided into a sulk. But knowing his son as he did, Mags was reasonably sure he was thinking all this over, even though he was sulking.
"I am tolerably certain this is something every youngling goes through at this age. I'm also very sure I'm going to get quite tired of that pouty face before he grows out of it.
I'd call it rebellious rather than pouty.
I'm the one looking at it, horse. Now, I'll tell you what I will do. I will let you look over the information on missing people. I'll let you have access to all the maps, give you permission to plot things on them with charcoal we can brush away, and you can see if you can find a pattern in the disappearances. You can question anyone here in Withern that you like. And that includes Arvel. He glanced over at the herald, who nodded. You can even take Laurel and your horse and comb the countryside within a half day's ride of here. But if you are not back by sundown and the only reason is because you rode out farther than you should have, I'm revoking that privilege.
Some of the sulkiness dropped out of Perry's expression.
Yes, sir,
he said. Now, as your spymaster, my suggestion to you would be to take the maps and Arvel, and both of you go over them carefully after supper. And the same all day tomorrow. Then, if that seems like an endeavor that will bear fruit, start making inquiries in Withern of people who have reason to know something. Then, you should be able to determine the next direction to take your investigation. More of the sulkiness drained. Now Perry looked a bit more like his normal self.
Yes, sir, he said.
Meanwhile, Dolan and I are going to attempt to relay this agreement to Haven, so we can get someone out here who can ratify it. That's likely to take until bedtime.
He had only tried relay by mind speech a couple of times, since most of his work was done in Haven. He'd been fairly successful at it, but his success this time was going to depend on how many companions there were between him and Haven. And it was going to give him a splitting headache whether or not he succeeded.
Yes, sir, Perry replied and looked at Arvel. Is that all right with you, Harold Arvel?
It's great,
Arvel enthused.
I'm not all that good at organizing stuff, you know. If you're better than me, maybe we can discover something.
Not really good at organizing stuff turned out to be an understatement. What Perry discovered was that Arvel's notes consisted of rumors and queries from other people. Nothing of his notes was even close to being in a coherent form, and none of his sources were even aware of other disappearances. So slowly, carefully, with much cross-examining, Perry got Arvel's information properly organized. By then, they were both yawning, and Perry was in no shape to look at maps by dim candlelight. So in the morning, after a breakfast of bread and butter, since Mrs. Weaver hadn't yet arrived to make the real breakfast, Perry took the maps Arvel gave him to the big room where everyone had worked on the gemstone agreement, laid them out on the table, and began plotting each and every interrupted journey. He was so involved in this project that Laurel had to come and interrupt him for his proper breakfast, and by supper time, he had something that made Arvel's instinctive reason for alarm look perfectly rational. His father had recovered by then and was headache-free and willing to come look at his findings. And his father's face got a very sober look when he did.
Well, Mag said, looking at the map, there's at least one good reason why all those people seem to have vanished from within this circle you've drawn. The only road through there goes right through the middle of your circle.
Yes, but unless Arvel's only collected the stories of disappearances from this area...
I didn't, Arvel said immediately. I rode all over this area, asking people about missing folks.
He indicated a much bigger area, which had several roads through it.
Well then, Mags replied to Perry's immense satisfaction, now we have something. I never doubted you, Arvel, but looking at this, there's a pattern. Now we need to figure out the cause.
His father's face took on a deeply thoughtful cast.
We can't use the methods we do in the city. What other things have you noticed about the missing people, Perry?
There's never more than two of them. And if there are two, then they're generally young, Perry said promptly. Mostly it's single people who don't have anyone that would ask after them seriously. Small peddlers with two horses or walking with a donkey. Casual laborers. There are a lot of those. And the stories Arvel got were all from other casual laborers who asked if he'd heard from them or seen them. Some runaways. Even some petty criminals who lit out once people started to look at them suspiciously.
So that sounds like it could either be an animal, or animals, that's attacking travelers on the road, or a single human bandit who is preying on them. Mags frowned. Except if it's a bandit, instead of taking richer targets, he's taking poorer ones. That doesn't make sense.
I asked about strangers showing up with goods they didn't seem to know the value of,
Arvel put in.
With the missing small peddlers, you would think it would be impossible for one thief to know what they were all carrying was worth. So if it's a bandit, he's keeping the loot all to himself.
Which isn't logical,
Mags frowned more deeply. Huh. What are the odds it's an animal?
If it is, I can sniff it out, said Laurel.
Laurel says he can find any animal it might be, Perry relayed. Is there anything like a village in that area? Mags pulled on the lobe of his ear as he studied the map. Nothing's noted.
Just an inn? Here?
Arvel tapped a spot on the road that had a little X mark on it. Looking more closely, Perry saw it wasn't an X. It was a tiny, crossed knife and fork.
I took a trip out there just to talk to the innkeeper, but I didn't learn anything new from him.
And did you ask there about animal attacks? Mags asked. Arvel nodded.
And all the missing people, too.
He scratched his head.
The innkeeper said he hadn't had any trouble with wild animals attacking his stock, that no one spending the night said anything about attacks, and that the missing people had never turned up on his doorstep.
Now Arvel frowned.
Now that I think about it, though, he was awful sure of that.
Maybe a little too sure, Mags replied skeptically. I find it hard to believe that an innkeeper, even one that doesn't get as much traffic as a really busy place, is going to remember every single customer that crosses his threshold. Arvel frowned harder.
Thinking back? Aye.
But what would an innkeeper... I mean, why would he be helping someone...
Perry looked from his father to Arvel and back again.
He'd have no way of selling what he stole, would he? Even if the peddlers weren't carrying as much as we can, that's still 5 or 6 packloads of trading goods. I mean, people are going to question where an innkeeper out in the middle of nowhere got so much stuff. So why would he be disappearing people?
He didn't for a moment question his father's hunch about the innkeeper. It was Mags's job to be suspicious, after all. Well, it was his job, too.
If that is what's happening, the reason isn't obvious.
Mags pulled on his earlobe again and stared at the spot on the map where the inn was.
It isn't for what these people were carrying. It can't be, since most of them were not peddlers. A few personal belongings of relatively poor people aren't going to tempt anyone but the most desperate. And even if his inn hasn't got a lot of custom out here, it'll have enough to be profitable without doing away with his customers. It has to be for those people themselves. It isn't kidnapping, because none of them have anyone who would ransom them.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
Arvel blurted, looking horrified.
You've got a rich field of garnets here,
Mags pointed out, tapping the map where Withern was.
This entire area is all the same kind of hilly territory, not unlike the mines where I was enslaved as a child. Where there are garnets, there are often more valuable stones. And if I needed slaves that were strong enough to work those mines, but not so strong or clever that they would need more than a handful of guards, those sorts of people, casual laborers, peddlers used to walking long distances, and young people, are exactly the kind I would take.
I've never heard of a mine there,
Arvel objected.
And you wouldn't. This would be like that gold mine you and your friends discovered. A secret. If my guess is right, that is. If it's not,
Mag shrugged.
If it's not, I'd still bet the key to the disappearances is at that inn. This isn't part of Aldemar. There's no one keeping an eye on innkeepers and tavern keepers to make sure they stay honest.
He turned toward Perry, who looked up at his father expectantly. You and I are going to go out there, he said, and Laurel, of course.
I'm going to need both of you.
Perry felt his heart leap.
He thinks I am good enough, ready enough to go with him and help.
Arvel was frowning at the map.
I'm not sure you have legal standing to do that, Mags. Like you said, that's technically not in Valdemar. I mean, here's the border, and most of that part of the road is outside Valdemar.
But the people who are missing are from Valdemar, Mags replied firmly. And it might not be in Valdemar, but there's no other kingdom claiming it either. I don't even think the Hawk brothers are out there now.
Laurel raised his head at that.
Yes,
he affirmed. His massive brow wrinkled, then he looked up at Perry.
The Hawk brothers left roughly a generation ago. There are humans claiming to be lords who have fortified dwellings and often villages, some of which depend on them. But the Hawk brothers said the land you are looking at needed to be cleansed of inimical magic, and they withdrew to establish a new vale.
Perry sympathized with his new friend. Given the limitations of Laurel's speech, that would have taken a long time to say aloud, with them trying to puzzle out exactly what he was saying.
Laurel says there are villages out there, and local lords, but the Hawk brothers pulled out of the area about a generation ago.
Your friend is proving to be a lot more useful than I would have thought, Mags replied. He looked down at the map.
All right,
This will be the plan. We'll move slowly toward that inn, and Laurel will be scouting for any signs of a predator large and bold enough to attack human beings. If we don't encounter anything, once we get to the area, we'll scout the inn carefully and determine only after we do whether we will be entering it. Arvel looked at him oddly.
Why would you do that?
He asked. Because I am very careful, Mags replied as Perry nodded. And I trust no one, not in whites. It took them 2 days to get ready. Perry was surprised to discover that his father had actually made preparations for camping instead of using the caravan. And in one of the storage compartments on the roof of the caravan was everything they would need, from the canvas for a shelter to a hand axe. But he had to get it all down, make sure it was in good shape, then put together loads for the 3 horses they were taking. He wasn't going to ride Dalin, since they were still disguising themselves as traders. It wouldn't do to be riding a companion. Maybe people would think Dalin was just a big white horse, but all it would take would be 1 person recognizing him for what he was, and their disguises would be over. Dalin was coming along, of course, but covertly, and to do that, he couldn't carry a pack, as it would probably hang up on the underbrush. Lily and Daisy would serve as his riding horse and pack horse, respectively, and of course, Perry would be on Pog. Mags had to pack a smaller, lighter version of his trade goods, leaving out the bolts of material altogether, as well as most of the beads. And meanwhile, the women of Withern were coming to the caravan with garnets to trade, so he had to do this while also keeping up appearances. But Perry was finally of help here. He already knew how to weigh and appraise rough gemstones from working in the pawn shop, and he now knew the value by weight of the garnets here. So unless a woman specifically asked for Mags, Perry waited on her. The elaborate and expensive trims were going very fast, and so was the fancy soft wool and the woolen threads to embroider it with. One daring young woman bought enough of the mist linen to make a nightdress. When Perry told his father that, Mags laughed but said nothing. He had a good idea why they were buying so much that could be considered frivolous. For one thing, they were not yet relying on the garnets as part of their income. Mentally, the stones were still the worthless rocks that the children chipped out to play with, and the fact that they could get anything for them made the ladies inclined to buy as much as they could. For another, women out here worked very hard and seldom saw pretty things they had not made themselves, and the men were at least vaguely aware of this. That meant that husbands, fathers, and suitors had motivation to go chip out a handful of stones after the work of the day was done, press them into their loved ones' hands, and say, "Go get yourself something nice." And of course, there was nothing stopping any of the women from chipping out a handful themselves. Finally, near sunset, what Perry thought was probably the last of the customers disappeared around the trees, going back to Withern with her booty. And just when they were about to close everything up and get supper, Mrs. Weaver came out of the kitchen, a little leather pouch of her own dangling from her hand.
"I hope there's still some of that wool left," she said before Mags could greet her.
"There is some," Mags brought out what was left of the bolt. She measured out what was left expertly.
"I'll take it all," she said, surprising them both. "I'm going to supply Bird with a fancy shirt. He hasn't a best shirt at all anymore, and this one should be comfortable enough. I'll actually be able to get him to wear it."
She consulted with Mags over the sort of trim that a plain and modest man would not be embarrassed to wear. Eventually, they settled on black and gray. She went on her way with her parcel, and they went into the kitchen for supper. Then, by the light of the setting sun, they packed up everything that they weren't taking with them and stored it all back in the locked compartments under the caravan. "You can stay here, you know," Mags told Perry as they walked back to the house. "Camping isn't all that comfortable, even though this is the best season to be doing it." Perry shook his head.
"You won't be able to do half as much as if you have me and Laurel along. And how would you hunt for dangerous beasts without Laurel?"
He tried to look as competent and prepared for anything as he could.
"I'm not so soft that I can't sleep on the ground."
"Are you all packed?" Perry nodded. "All right then. Get a good night's rest, because we'll be up early." Mags left his son at the entrance of the hall to the guest rooms and went farther into the house, probably to talk to Arvel. Perry looked down at Laurel.
"I'm glad we're getting out of here."
"I am as well. This does not seem the best use of our time if there are people who are missing,"
Laurel agreed. Perry grinned. It was nice to have someone who is in agreement with him. He had thought he might be too excited about leaving to sleep, but instead, he found when he lay down,
He wasn't excited at all. Instead, what he felt was more a sense of relief that they were finally going, and it wasn't hard to drop off at all. The next thing he knew, his father was shaking him awake. It was still dark outside, and he had to light a candle to see by. Since he could only take as much as Pog could carry, he was leaving quite a bit behind. Everything he wasn't taking with him was stored in the caravan now. It was too early for Mrs. Weaver to be here, but she had left an egg pie for their breakfast. They made short work of most of it, and Arvel, who had gotten up with them, inhaled what was left. By the time the two of them set off, there was just a sliver of sun above the horizon. There had been no sign of Dalin as they loaded the horses and rode away from Arvel's home, and for the life of him, Perry couldn't see the companion anywhere. People had told him that out in the wilderness, companions could practically make themselves vanish if they cared to, but this was his first time seeing it from self. How could something the size of a horse be moving around in the woods without a trace? Laurel stayed at Pog's heel until they got past Withern. Then, between one moment and the next, he disappeared as well, using his nose to hunt for dangerous beasts and his long legs to cover at least as much ground as Dalin could. The entire first day was uneventful, since Mags wanted to give Laurel and Dalin plenty of time to search off the road for perils no one else had uncovered. Their horses ambled rather than moving briskly, and Mags used the time to drill Perry on geography. Laurel found them a good campsite, off the road, but easy to get to on top of a rise above a stream. They didn't have an actual tent, just a couple of pieces of waterproofed canvas that could be rigged into a rain shelter, and as pleasant as the evening was, they didn't even bother with that. They ate fish they caught in the stream, broiled over the coals on a fork of sticks and watercress. Laurel shared the fish. When they went to bed, Perry stretched his mind out as far as he could reach, but he didn't turn up anything. He was still trying when sleep overtook him. The next 2 days were like the first, except that at the second camp they ate rabbits caught by Laurel, and at the third, Mags brought down a male duck that Perry could assure him was unmated. By the time the fourth day dawned, Perry was certain that nothing was going to happen until they got to the inn. He could not have been more wrong. 8.
Trouble!
Laurel exclaimed just as Perry heard it in his mind, weak and distant. A cry of distress. Frantic, acute distress. It might be weak, but the emotions of fear and panic were definitely there.
Help!
It was distinct and clear, and in real words, not images, as articulate as Laurel. But it was in the part of the mind voice where he expected to hear the nattering of birds, not something that sounded intelligent.
Help! Help!
And there was no doubt in his mind. He had to answer. His head snapped around as he homed in on the mental voice, the fear the unknown projected impelling him.
Father, I have to go. Someone's in trouble. Laurel hears it too, he gasped.
What? His father began, but he'd already wrenched Pog's head around, and without a second thought, he doubled back to a creek they had just crossed and set Pog dashing upstream, water flying in all directions.
Thank the gods this creek is sandy-bottomed and not rocks.
His heart raced. Urgency flooded him as the mind voice got clearer and stronger the closer he got, and with it came the images of what was attacking. A mob of lightning-fast creatures that looked something like sooty weasels, but were nearly the size of foxes. He got mere glimpses, though. Whatever was holding them off, the originator of the call, was jumping around too much for him to figure out what sort of animal it was.
What if this is some kind of a trap?
Laurel, he sent, but before he could voice his fear, Laurel anticipated him.
Not a trap. Trust me.
Pog somehow managed to catch up to Laurel. And a heartbeat later, Dalin plunged out of the undergrowth and down into the creek bed behind him. They raced in single file down the watercourse, sending up tails of spray. At a wider spot, Dalin slipped past Pog and took the lead behind Laurel. Pog seemed to react to this with relief. He didn't slacken his pace, but he seemed more confident in his footing with Dalin in the lead. Perry just leaned down over Pog's neck and concentrated on the cries for help. From the strength, they had to be getting close. He reached for the bow he had in a case at his knee, strung, of course, because it would do no damn good at all if it wasn't already strung and he needed it. He'd just gotten it out and an arrow ready when Laurel made an abrupt left-hand turn and they all crashed through the brush at the side of the creek and came out under enormous trees. There was almost no growth under here. The canopy overhead was too thick to allow anything to grow. Laurel lengthened his stride, a gray blur, with Dallin keeping pace beside him and Pog laboring to catch up. They were heading for a patch of sunlight, sunlight in which dark shapes were moving. Laurel howled and Dallin screamed a challenge. Then they were among those dark shapes. Dallin plunging and kicking, Laurel's jaws snapping at them. This was well within Perry's bow reach. He pulled Pog up, put an arrow to the string, sighted, and let fly. He hit the thing he was aiming for, and with a shrill shriek, it flopped around wildly. Laurel finally caught another one of the things in his enormous jaws, shook it violently, and tossed it away limp. Dallin trampled the beast Perry had skewered, and Perry shot another. "Come on!" Laurel urged, and Perry stopped shooting to kick Pog into a gallop, following Laurel through another scrim of undergrowth into a clearing. The moment they came out into the light, Laurel was momentarily swarmed by the evil creatures, whatever they were, but not for long. Dallin came to his rescue, kicking, biting, and trampling. The air was rank with the scent of blood, which seemed to madden the things further. Perry let off shot after shot, concentrating on the beasts trying to pull down Laurel. Strangely, he couldn't touch their minds, couldn't even sense them. He felt Lily and Daisy as they plunged into the clearing, and soon more arrows were joining his in the air. Just in time, because he reached for another in the saddlebow quiver, and his hand closed on empty air. And just then, just as suddenly as it had begun, it was over. The only creatures left in the clearing were the dead and dying. The pack had finally realized they could not win this battle and had fled. Perry raised his head to see what it was they had been defending, and looked into the eyes of half a dozen of the biggest ravens he had ever seen in his life. The size of a goshawk, or bigger. One of them shoved off from the ground and flapped wearily to land at Laurel's feet.
"Thank you, friends," he heard. "The slicer pack nearly had us."
Why didn't they fly? He was thinking. And then a couple more of the ravens moved and he saw why. The massive nest on the ground, the branch that had held it up safe aloft, broken. The four half-feathered fledglings huddled together in the middle of the mass of branches in mindless terror. "You are welcome, friends," he sent, causing all the ravens to swivel their heads at once to stare at him.
"Would someone please explain to me what just happened?" his father said into the silence.
"Tell him these are Hawk Brother Bondbirds, and we rescued their young," Laurel said shortly, as Perry slid down out of Pog's saddle, ground-tied him, and went to check Laurel for injuries.
"These are Hawk Brother Bondbirds," he repeated obediently, running his hands over Laurel's back, sides, and legs. "Their nest ended up on the ground, and I guess these things swarmed it. Laurel heard the call for help, then I did."
"All right, that makes sense. Are the babies hurt?"
Mags dismounted and ground-tied Lily and Daisy, going to Dallin to check his wounds. Dallin's were obvious. From the knee down, his legs were red from all the bleeding bites.
"My father wants to know if your babies are all right," Perry relayed, finding to his relief that Laurel's wounds were superficial and were already clotting. "Frightened, but unhurt,"
one of the ravens acknowledged.
"But the slicer will return."
"Then we'd better get that nest back up in the tree, hadn't we?" he replied, going to Pog for his coil of rope. "Father, I'm going to have to do some climbing. Can you make sure Laurel and Pog are taken care of?"
"Climbing?"
Mags blinked at him a moment, then took in the downed nest just past him.
"Yes, absolutely. Will you be all right solo?"
Perry looked at the nearest tree. It was eminently climbable, with nice rough bark and knobby places everywhere where old branches had died back. He'd had to climb far worse.
"No problem."
He tilted his head back, peering up at the living branches.
"How far up would you like the new nest?"
"Let us find a good place for it,"
the raven he was talking to replied, and all the adults took to the air. He went over to see to the fledglings, soothing them with his mind, then, when they calmed and looked up at him trustingly, making sure they weren't injured. They were probably the ugliest creatures he had ever seen, all over quills and bare skin. And already, with their fears eased, they were nudging him with hunger.
"Laurel, are these things safe for the young to eat?"
Laurel looked up from licking his small wounds.
They tasted all right to me, or as all right as weasels ever taste.
He dragged one of the dead things over to the nest, where the young birds, evidently old enough now to feed themselves, fell on it, tearing bits off, which they gulped down with enthusiasm.
How's darling, Papa?
Looks worse than it is. Hazard of having a white coat.
One of Dalin's legs was clean. Mags was working on the second with a bit of rag and his water skin.
Raven friend!
He looked up at the summons, to see all of the adult birds sitting on a branch two massive trees to the left of where he was standing.
Here is a good place!
Climbing the tree was even easier than it looked, although once he was perched astraddle on the branch the birds wanted him to use, he realized he was higher up than he had ever been before in his life. Rather than making him dizzy, he felt rather euphoric. It was pretty clear where they wanted the new nest built. This branch forked out into a Y shape, not far from him. He could lash a third branch to make a triangular base on which to rebuild the nest.
Papa!
He called down, lowering his rope.
I need a branch as thick as my wrist and as long as Dalin is tall, and some cord!
Once that branch was hauled up and lashed into place, the ravens themselves brought him smaller branches to build the platform with. Once the platform was in place, the ravens took over the rebuilding entirely. With six of them at work, there was soon a brand new nest in place, strong and deep. He gave the side of it an experimental shake. Though it looked as if it were nothing more than a random pile of branches, it didn't even budge. He shook it harder. It still wasn't moving. Satisfied with their mutual handiwork, he had Mags send the babies up one at a time, tied in one of his shirts as a sling. They settled happily into the new nest, and Perry left them there with another one of the dead creatures to eat as soon as they got hungry again. Once down on the ground, it was obvious that the ravens were conferring up there. Perry left them to it and checked with Laurel and his father.
Well, that was exciting, Mags observed mildly.
He had finished cleaning up Dalin's legs, and they were now white again, with pink lines all over them from the bites that were already healing. It never failed to amaze him how quickly companions healed. Anything short of a major bone break was half healed in a day.
I thought you said the Hawk brothers were gone from here, Perry said instead to Laurel.
They are, but there are always more of the Bundbird breeds than there are Hawk brothers, particularly the crows and ravens.
All right, that makes sense, he acknowledged, and he looked up at the silent ravens, all sitting on the edge of the nest, facing inward, as if they were having a conference.
Maybe they were.
You should ask them whether they have heard of anything about an animal that would carry humans off from the road, Mags observed, looking where he was looking. Although those weasel things might go after something as big as a human.
The raven called them Slytha, Perry replied, frowning a little. I don't know, Papa. They struck me as pretty cowardly. It might have seemed like we were fighting them for candle marks, but it couldn't have been long.
I have never heard of Slytha attacking even a lone human unless he was injured, Laurel confirmed.
Perry had already taken to looking for their spent arrows, and he relayed that. He collected the broken ones as well as the intact ones. After all, there was no point in leaving behind useful points, and they might be able to save the fletching feathers as well if they were careful. Each intact arrow was one more they wouldn't have to replace. Just as he picked up the last one by count, one of the ravens flew down to land heavily beside him. He squatted down, balancing on the balls of his feet to keep himself at the raven's level, more or less.
We are in your debt,
the bird said simply, tilting its head to look at him out of one very bright black eye. Again, he was astonished how clear the mind voice was and how close to human the thoughts were. It waited, then, and after a moment he realized it was waiting for him to tell it what he wanted from them. He almost asked it if it knew where it could steal some arrows for him to replace the broken ones, but stopped himself just in time. Because these were ravens, after all, and they very likely did and would, and it might mean stealing them from someone who needed those arrows even more than he and his father did.
Have you seen anything around here that would attack and kill a human being?
He asked instead. The raven considered his question.
Not on purpose,
it said finally.
Even in a mob, the Slytha do not attack anything bigger than they are. All the monstrous creatures are gone from here. Perhaps a bear, but I have not seen one in these woods.
It waited again, but he honestly did not know what to say to it. Finally, it clacked its beak in frustration.
You are not a hawk, brother.
Actually, it didn't use that word. It didn't use any word. It used a concept that he instantly understood meant hawk, brother, but was a lot more complicated than that, probably reflecting the bird's complicated relationships with the Taledras. No, I'm not, he agreed.
We will not bond to you,
it continued. I understand that, he agreed again.
If you need us, call, or send a Kyrie.
It waited to see if he was satisfied with that. At least, that was the impression he got. Thank you. That will be perfect, he replied, and the raven heaved a great sigh of relief, ruffled up all its feathers, and then took off. He glanced over at his father to see Mag staring at him with a perplexed expression on his face. Now I understand how other people feel when Dullin and I are having a long conversation, his father admitted. I wanted to interrupt and demand to know what he was saying to you, but I knew how infuriating that would be. Perry stood up and handed his father the quiver of intact arrows, rolling the pieces in the rag he used to rub Pog down with to keep the bits together until he could figure out what to do with them.
Laurel said he's never heard of Slyta attacking humans, that they never attack anything bigger than themselves, not even in a mob. Then the raven flew down to talk. It said the ravens were in my debt. Then we established that I have no right to make a bond bird out of any of them, and they said to call or send Laurel if we need them. Oh, and they haven't seen any animals attacking humans in their territory.
He scratched his head.
Of course, that just means that a couple of leagues down the road, there could still be some animal or monster they haven't seen.
Mags nodded thoughtfully. Interesting that they wanted you to acknowledge you hadn't a right to a raven bond bird, though. Makes me wonder if they would have agreed to that if you had insisted on it.
Perry stowed the broken arrows in his pack and took the handful of intact ones his father gave him and put them in the saddle bow quiver. They'd been really lucky. By his count, they hadn't lost any arrows, and no more than 8 were broken. Considering how Dallin had been trampling the Slytha, that was almost a miracle.
I wouldn't do that, he said firmly. It'd be all right here, but what would happen when we went back to Haven? The ravens there wouldn't be bond birds. He'd be all alone, no one to talk to except me and Laurel. That's not fair.
He mounted as his father did the same. You're right, it's not fair. You did the right thing. We didn't put a price on our help, and it's not fair to demand one afterward.
His father looked down at Laurel.
I think we should find a camping spot early, make a better job of tending wounds and get a good night's sleep.
We could camp where we left the road. We'd have water there, Perry suggested. And if there isn't anything right off the road, we might find something upstream. Or there will still be plenty of time to travel on and find something better.
His father nodded, and with Laurel leading the way, they left the clearing and the softly muttering ravens behind. Perry hadn't realized how much ground they must have covered in their headlong dash to save the raven fledglings. Taking the route back slowly, allowing the cool water of the creek to soothe the bite wounds on Dallin's legs and on Laurel's, occupied at least a couple of candle marks. Now that they weren't moving at a breakneck pace, they saw plenty of signs that the watercourse had been sculpted in part by human hands. Or hands, anyway. Why the Hawk brothers would have wanted to do that, Perry hadn't a clue, but he supposed they must have had a good reason. Maybe flood control? The creek was broader than seemed quite natural, so the water ran quietly with scarcely a ripple, and even when it was running with floodwaters, it looked like it would be easy enough to ford at the point where it crossed the road. The bed of the creek was smooth without being slippery, with a nice layer of sandy mud on the bottom. Mags paused at that point, looking up and down the road, frowning.
I don't like this as a stopping point, he said finally. Laurel, do you remember anything good on the back trail?
Laurel shook his head.
All right then, let's move on, Mags decreed. We still have most of the afternoon ahead of us, and the odds are good we'll find a better site than here.
Perry didn't voice an objection, but he had to admit he was feeling the effects of the fight and the climbing, and if he was, surely Dallin and Laurel were in no better shape. But they said nothing, so he kept his mouth shut. But Mags proved to be right. It wasn't more than a candle mark later, and likely much less, when Mags's head came up, and he said with satisfaction,
Dallin has a good spot for us.
A little farther off, there was a path running off at an angle to the road.
Mags took it, and Perry and Laurel followed. There was a bit of an uphill climb, and they found themselves on the top of a rock bluff, looking out over a little valley with another stream running through it. There was plenty of grazing, and Laurel